Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show. We are talking about Al-Quds 2023. Assalamu alaikum and welcome, dear viewers, to the Islamic Pulse talk show. We are here talking about Al-Quds and Palestine 2023. In order to talk a little bit about Al-Quds and some of the issues revolving around Al-Quds, we decided to humbly invite Sayyid Agha Ali Reza from the Islamic Republic of Pakistan to speak to us a little bit about the Al-Quds Day, the event, and some of the issues surrounding Palestine. So let's go ahead, invite him, and start the talk show. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid Agha Ali Reza. Welcome to the Islamic Pulse talk show.
Thank you so much. Wa alaikum assalam. Thank you for having me, and inshallah, I hope that the discussion that we have is beneficial for our audience and to whoever is listening and viewing this talk show, inshallah.
Inshallah. Thank you so much again, taking time out of your busy schedule to sit down and speak with us. Of course, we know that Palestine, of course, in the words of Rahbar al-Muazzam, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, is the fundamental issue in the Islamic world. And also we know that Palestine over the last 70 years is an issue which is not only limited to the Muslims, it's limited now, well, not limited to, but it is also including the rest of humanity. Absolutely. It is a humanitarian issue, a humanitarian cause as well. So we wanted to talk a little bit, especially where we have Al-Quds coming up, you know, and mashallah, the brothers and sisters all across the world, they Absolutely. Celebrate and commemorate this Al-Quds Day and this solidarity with Palestine. And so along those lines, we wanted to speak a little bit about Palestine with you. We hand it over to you, Sayyid Agha Ali Reza, in the name of Allah.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When we talk about Palestine, we're talking about the core most issue, geopolitical issue of the Muslim world. Mm-hmm. And this is something that Imam Khomeini highlighted, Rizwanullah ta'ala alayhi, and Imam Khamenei, following in the footsteps of Imam Khomeini and carrying on the project of the Islamic Revolution, he highlights this as well, and highlights this on an annual basis. And obviously, the Islamic Republic is at the forefront of defending the rights of the Palestinian people, especially their right to resist. Mm-hmm. Now, this is very important because when we talk about the rights of a people, yes. normally what happens is that the narrative gets hijacked.
Sure.
By other ideologies. And then the entire focus comes upon the right, for example, to economic development, the right to free speech, the right to certain liberal, the expression of one's opinion, the right to housing, the right to medicine. All of these are true. All of these are true. But if you change their place within the hierarchy of rights, then yes. it becomes a deviation. Yes. See, that's the only thing that is important. It's just important enough to change the place of something within the actual system of affairs to create a deviation.
And this could also be called injustice, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So justice being putting that which should be in its place.
Excellent.
Unjust
exactly.
is the opposite, is moving
exactly.
the things around.
Yes. So within our ideology, when we talk about adl, we talk about qist, we talk about justice, it's was ushay ala mawza'ihi, putting everything in its own place, right? So if you change that place, it turns into injustice.
Right.
Even if
right.
from the outside, it might seem like an instance of welfare, an instance of humanitarianism, but in reality, it is injustice because it has those consequences, those holistic and comprehensive consequences, which will be extremely detrimental to the entirety of humanity.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting.
And just to develop on what you said, like putting everything in its place, the interesting thing about Islamic ideology is that if you look at this, and this is in itself, the sentence is derived from a narrated tradition, if you look at this, it kind of alludes and in fact, it definitely alludes to the fact that in a divine worldview, in a worldview where you have God, who is the creator, who is creating everything based on his hikmah and his divine wisdom, everything has a place. Everything has an existential place, an objective place. So it's not arbitrary. It's not people deciding what is right and what is wrong. It is the universe. It is creation itself. It is the matrix of how everything is created, right? So it's in its own place. And if you change those things, then everything starts going wrong. Mm-hmm. And then you have Zahar al-Fisad fil barri wal bahr bima kasabat aydin nas. So what we do creates that facade mm-hmm. in the totality of existence.
This disbalance.
Yeah. And this disbalance and disturbing mm-hmm. the equilibrium, right?
It's interesting, but in the present day, in the modern world, this is very clearly seen by us, where this disbalance or this unequilibrium can be seen on all sorts of aspects, whether it's
Absolutely.
Nature
Absolutely.
Or whether it's wars or whether it's poverty or whether
Absolutely.
It's this racial discrimination. I mean,
Absolutely.
Across the board, you see this disbalance of the world.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And one of the major disbalances is in the narratives that are presented, right? Because right now, if we were just to like kind of touch on this, in the Western world, you see people who are social justice warriors. What is their focus? In the past, it used to be economic affairs because that was so in your face that poverty and famine and grief of that sort is important. But now the narrative is shifting towards things which are superficial in nature, which aren't that important, which do not concern the majority. In fact, they only concern a micro minority of the human population, right?
Right.
And you can obviously deduce what I'm talking about. So that is a form of kind of hijacking the narrative and deviating the narrative from where it needs to be. But let me reiterate, even in the past, when the entire narrative of justice throughout the world globally, before the Islamic Revolution, before Imam Khomeini's narrative, you saw that justice was focused only on economic affairs. This in itself is deviation. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because when you say that the most important thing is economic justice,
right.
And then there is no other form of justice, when you kind of negate everything else, then basically you are presenting a distorted image of the human essence
right.
to your audience, right?
Right, right.
And you are inherently turning them into materialists.
Right.
Because
it's all about money and wealth.
It's all about money and wealth. And then, and if you have like a proper share, then everything will be good.
Right.
Whereas that is untrue. And we have seen this, especially in some of the most so-called developed nations in the world. For example, in Scandinavia, you see that they are not the happiest people in the world.
If they probably have one of the higher suicide rates.
Exactly, exactly. See, and even though the economic condition is like the best in the world.
Yes, one of the best welfare states.
Exactly. So that in itself is a deviation. But coming back to the topic of Palestine,
sure.
What I was trying to say is that when you stop talking about the right of resistance,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then you are deviating from the true narrative. Now, what the Islamic Republic has done, what the Islamic Revolution has done, and Imam Khomeini at its helm, is that they have promoted the right of the Palestinian resistance.
Right.
And
yes.
they have done this without mincing their words.
Right.
How can a country that was historically, a piece of land that was historically home to a nation, historically home to an ethnic group, be usurped by an external force, not even an adjacent other sovereign political entity,
right.
but people who just swarmed in like locust and
right.
kind of just exploited the lack of infrastructure and the lack of political integration of the local population and de-seated them completely, taking over their land, taking over their resources, taking over their culture and their heritage. Today, the Zionist regime, this illegal Zionist regime, and the entire entity even promotes Palestinian cuisine as its own. And they talk
yeah.
about cultural appropriation in the West,
mm.
right? But when this happens, oh, everyone's hush-hush.
Mm.
And the only one talking about
Strange.
This in, mm. at the global level is the Islamic Republic and especially Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. So we see this as a central topic, a central issue that everyone needs to be focused on, especially on Yom al-Quds, because that is the international day of expressing your anger against this form of oppression. Now, if we kind of talk about why Palestine, why not mm-hmm. the other places where oppression is happening?
Because this is a question that comes up quite often amongst
exactly.
people, is why are we focusing so much on Palestine? Why are we not focusing on perhaps some of the other issues around the world that are concerning the Muslims? So yes.
Exactly.
This, yeah.
First of all, let me say that as far as the Islamic Revolution is concerned, as far as the leader of the Islamic Revolution is concerned, the Islamic Republic is involved in trying to create justice and equality and a normal situation for people everywhere, right? But obviously that is restrained by the amount of capability and the amount of opportunity that is available to the Islamic Republic.
And the hierarchy of priorities.
And the hierarchy of priorities.
In order to make sure there is justice.
Exactly, exactly. So within this, like the first fallacy is this, sometimes people say, why are they ignoring these other places? Well, we see that they aren't ignoring. Some places they are engaged on a diplomatic level. Right. So in other places, they are engaged in a cultural level. In other places, they are engaged militarily. So it's not as if the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution is ignoring other places of oppression and other instances of oppression. Obviously, as a footnote, I must add here that sometimes certain places are highlighted as instances of oppression. But if you're really academically, if you research what's truly going on, you find out that it's propaganda. It's kind of a proxy war between two superpowers, etc. So what we're talking about is genuine instances of oppression, like Bahrain, like Yemen, like other places, right? The Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution get involved there at different levels of involvement, because involvement isn't just an off and on switch. There are levels to involvement, and those levels are meticulously crafted in order to create a better situation without creating more trouble in those areas, right?
MashaAllah.
Now, given this fact, the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution and its leadership still focus and like they have this emphasis upon the Palestinian issue. So the question is, why emphasize on Palestine? Now, if you look at Palestine and you compare this to other instances of oppression, contemporary oppression, you'll see that Palestine is a collection of all the hallmarks of oppression that are possibly imaginable, right? For example, if you compare if you compare the issue of occupation, you see that in other places you have sovereign political entities occupying another piece of territory, right? So you have recognized countries, recognized on a global level, attacking and occupying a certain section of another country or a territory of another nation, right? And at the same time, when you look at these other places, you see that there is some gray area in terms of the legitimacy of these actions, right? So the nation in itself has a claim to independence, while as this other sovereign entity lays claim to being like the rightful to the rightful ownership of that territory.
Sure.
Something that we are seeing right now in terms of like certain sections of Ukraine and the war between Ukraine and Russia. But when it comes to Palestine, it's all black and white.
Sure.
There was no Israel before 1948 for there to be any case another nation to come into Palestine and say that this was our homeland, except for that blatant lie, which is like which the Zionists peddle on a global level, saying that this was the original homeland of the Jewish people. Now, if you just look at that argument, right? International Zionism on a global level, and our audience knows this, they have, in fact, the people living in the West have felt this, this tangible in the West. International global Zionism has attacked religious scriptures at every level possible. They've made fun of them, ridiculed them, they have negated their laws, they have stood up and made laws which are in contradiction to those scripture-based laws.
Right.
So the Bible, the Old and the New Testament, is of no value to them.
Right.
It's of no value. It does not reflect history for them. It does not reflect proper ethics for them. But when it comes to creating a lame excuse, where do they derive their whole argument of legitimacy? The right to return from the Bible.
Which they haven't given any value to.
At least have a level playing field. If the Bible is the basis of your decision making, if the Bible is the basis of how you see history,
then why you got these secular countries which have nothing to do with religion, and they actually promote things like LGBT issues, which is the exact opposite of
the Bible. Negating divine values, even divine values which are unanimous in nature throughout the different kinds of religious denominations. But when it comes to Palestine, they come up with this lame excuse, this hypocritical story of Palestine being the historic homeland of the Jews, and then coming back. Yes, in terms of history, we believe this as well, that Jews used to live in Palestine, right? But those Jews have almost nothing to do with these people who are coming from Western lands, coming from Eastern lands as well, and occupying a state which was the homeland of Palestinian people, of Palestinian Muslims and Christians, and Palestinian Jews as well.
Right?
Palestinian Jews as well, who were living in those lands for centuries. And there was no issue.
Yeah, it was really interesting. We were kind of, you know, brainstorming and talking and discussing with some of the brothers. You know, Mubayasa is one of the things we do here in the Hosa. But it was really interesting. So somebody had brought up this fact that the last time that there was a, you know, quote unquote Jewish state, it was 70 AD, where the Roman Empire came and they, you know, they dismantled the, so that's 70 AD, right? So that means 70 years after the death of Jesus Christ, right? According to the narrative. So, and now the next point was that, for example, if so, 70 AD now is like 2023, it's like well over 1,000 years ago, right? Well over 1,000 years ago, there was a Jewish state which ended in 70 AD. So then, see, United States of America has only been created in the last 300 years.
Exactly.
And who are the original owners of, are the Native Americans? So if we're going to be just and we're going to use this narrative of give the land back to the people who, well, then the Native Americans in a span of 300 years are, have more of a right to own the United States of America than, you know, the Jewish state who is well over 1,000 years ago.
Exactly. And even the interesting thing is, not only is it like completely ancient history,
right?
Even the learned scholars of the Jewish faith,
yes,
throughout history have stressed that it is their destiny not to have a sovereign state of their own. And it is only in within contemporary history, when Zionism began, that they kind of completely changed the entire thing around. Yeah. And all of a sudden, this bid'ah, this innovation in their religion,
a heresy in their rabbis.
Exactly. To some of the most learned rabbis in the world, they call it a heresy.
Yeah.
Israel is a heresy. That is one of the slogans that many of these rabbis raise. So it's very interesting, as you said. And if you're going to apply this precedence, if you're going to apply this law, then apply it to the United States as well.
Yeah,
then
Canada, apply Australia.
It to Canada, Australia.
Scotland.
Apply it to so many other places. Apply it to like all other countries where there were prior regimes and there were prior entrenched government
peoples
who were living there and like completely changed the entire face of the earth. And even though we do not like, this is obviously for the benefit of our audience and for the benefit of our viewers, when we talk about the fact that there was a state in Israel, like in 70 AD, we even that state wasn't representative of the Jewish nation. It was just a tribal thing that happened in history. Obviously, at some place you are in a majority or you have power, and that is how you create a state. It wasn't something that was like an ideological Jewish state, right? But what you see right now is a fascist, ideological, Zionist, anti-Jewish state.
Right?
Because this, as you said, that it is a heresy in itself, right? So, just bringing this little point to a close, one of the major instances of extreme oppression, of unprecedented oppression in Palestine, is that a nation has been uprooted by a global conspiracy that has brought in aliens from other lands foreigners from other lands to occupy a nation, a land, and occupy its resources and occupy its country without there being any legitimacy, any sort of even a gray area to their claims.
I sometimes feel kind of bad for these Israelis that, you know, came from all across the world because they're being taken advantage of, right?
Absolutely.
They're being used.
Absolutely.
So you give them this kind of, you know, this thinking that, you know, we've come back to your homeland and then for ulterior purposes, and then it's the common people, you know, that are under stress and duress.
But the thing to understand here is that the people who have come to Israel, they have come voluntarily.
Right.
So we have this principle even in fiqh, in jurisprudence, al-istiraru bil-ikhtiyar, la yunafil ikhtiyar. If you are in a position where now you have no choices left and you are in a very bad position, but this position was something that you created by your own choices, then need to pay the penalty for those choices.
Right.
You can't jump off a building and then say that, oh, now I can't do anything because I'm in mid-air. No, you were the person who jumped. Everyone who looks at this phenomena would say that this is the guy who committed suicide, right? Mm-hmm. They won't blame it on the air or on gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the issues that we need to understand here is that this brings us to another key feature of the Zionist regime. In other scenarios, you can have two armies fighting one another, and you can still argue that both sides, the soldiers, the foot soldiers, they were really innocent. They were just following orders, or maybe they were forced to do so. Like the soldiers of the Baas regime during Saddam Hussein's time, they would actually kidnap their families so that they would be held hostage, so that these soldiers would fight against the Islamic Republic in the 80-year war.
Right.
Many times this is what would happen, especially with Shia families inside Iraq.
Strange.
So maybe you can kind of argue in many of these places that the foot soldiers or many of the people involved are victims of the situation. But in Israel, you can't do that. In Israel, the entire population of the Zionist regime is criminal. And that is not only supported by religious logic, but also by the Geneva Convention. You see what the Geneva Convention says, that if an entity occupies another land and brings in its civilians to populate that land, that occupied territory, then these civilians will be legitimate targets of the resistance.
This is what the Geneva Convention
says. This is what the Geneva Convention says. Religious logic and religious jurisprudence says the same thing as well. Because, and this is so rational.
Right.
Imagine having your house invaded by some person from outside, and then he brings his children and his wife and his entire family to sit in your living room and in your rooms and everywhere, and then you can't do anything. You can't do anything because, oh, these are civilian, I can't touch them. Okay, so maybe now I move to the next house and then they do this again. When will it stop?
So one of the things,
especially
I'm
sorry to interrupt you, especially if the people being brought in are being brought in voluntarily on their own accord. Occupy someone else's land. Now, apparently, these people look like civilians, but they're not civilians.
No, technically, they're not civilians. They're
an occupying force.
They're coming to occupy land.
Yes. If they had been forced to come here, if they had been coerced, then maybe we could debate the topic. But still, the Geneva Convention would be in place because it doesn't talk about coercion or otherwise. But we could still debate the topic, and maybe our own Islamic morality would have stood at a higher ground, because the Geneva Convention obviously is a material worldly convention, and Islamic ethics is something that stands on a higher pedestal. But when you talk about Israel, you're talking about a civilian population which is only apparently civilian. It is the delusion of being civilians, right? They are an occupying force because all of them have voluntarily come. All of them knew what the situation was, especially in this current environment of hyper technology, where everyone can Google anything up and understand what the reality is. They came by of their own accord to occupy these lands.
And
you have these documentaries as well, made by the Zionists themselves. People from among the population of the Zionist regime laughing about the fact that, oh, this is a garden, this is an olive garden, and I took it over and I kicked out that old woman who used to live here. Because this is my land, because I am this, like I am the descendant of Jacob and so on and so forth, all of these historical lies. And when you look at the DNA of this guy, he's some Slovak, Russian origin, right? So it's such a blatant lie.
Sayyid Agha Ali Reza, you were talking about though a very interesting thing, which was that as compared to other places in the world, that Palestine is this conglomeration of oppression.
Exactly.
And so if you wanted to continue along those lines. Yeah.
So it's not only just the collection of the entire set of different kinds of oppression. The instances of oppression themselves are also at the pinnacle compared to other places. Right, so if you solve the Palestine issue by default in terms of a global precedence being formed, you'll be able to solve other issues as well. Because then you could present this argument at an international level and say when the Zionist regime can be dismantled, then these other places are at a lower degree of oppression and at a lower degree of engagement and at a lower degree of conflict. So they should be solved based on the same principle as well.
Right.
Giving precedence to the local population, giving precedence to their right to exist and to resist. So the focus upon Israel, in fact, is a way and a path to solve all issues globally. But because before I go there, let's just come back to this idea of being a collection of all oppressions. So one of the instances of oppression was the fact that, as I said, they have taken away the right of resistance from a population, and the occupying force is something that is completely unprecedented in history, especially in the last 1,000 years. You never had like people from different parts of the world all of a sudden coming in, like, as I said, like locust, and like attacking a country and taking over the land. So this is one thing. Then
could you kind of, for example, one might say like the English colonial empire, or the way that they colonized the Americas, you know, Spain and Portugal and France and the UK, how they colonized the Americas. Are these not, for example, instances of this kind of Zionist settler colonial ideology? If you would want to compare those two, or are they different, or are they just kind of a baby and a daddy type thing?
Israel and the Zionist regime is a continuation of the same policy, right? Because that Zionism, yes, historically, in terms of formal Zionism and the coining of the word, began recently in European history. Right. But if you look at it Quranically, Zionism has been there from the very beginning. Zionism is basically ethnocentric and egocentric Judaism, which is in complete contrast to actual Judaism.
So it's pure, like, Judaism, if you
the
want
pure
to call
Judaism.
It.
In fact, I shouldn't even say Judaism. It's like Jewish nationhood. This idea so that we are a people. Yes, exactly. Right. This ultra racist idea, which is elaborated not only in the Quran but also in the Old and the New Testament, and it shows itself repeatedly throughout history, that there was always this community within the Jews, not all Jews, as I said. Even the Quran says that there are Jews who truly love God and are afraid of Him and worship Him with sincerity. So we're not talking about the Jewish faith in general, the genuine Jewish faith or the genuine Jewish people. We're talking about a cabal within the Jewish nation, which kind of covertly infiltrated into the Jewish nation, and they had no belief in God or in the divine values of the Old and New Testaments or in any other scripture. These were people who created obstacles for the Prophet Musa himself, for the other prophets. These are the people who used to oppress and persecute the prophets. These are the people who always had this ideology that we are the chosen nation and even God cannot do anything against us. That we are the superior, extremely supremacist, like Hitler. Let me say this, Hitler and fascism and the Nazi regime, they kind of completely, they're babies in front of this kind of a historical, super racist ideology.
And you see this on the ground. So for example, you know, not just, it's not that we're just saying this, you see this on the ground. So for example, building a wall around yourself, this apartheid wall, you know, or there are certain areas where Palestinians are not allowed to go.
Excommunicating and oppressing Jews themselves. In fact, historically, the very first victims of this cabal, of this group of ultra-racist people within the Jewish community, but Jews themselves.
Mm. Yeah, they look down upon these Ethiopian Jews or exactly. Abyssinian Jews. Jews from different Sephardic Jews, for example, exactly. are looked down exactly. upon. They're not considered to be at the same level as, for example, Ashkenazi Jews.
Exactly.
Right. So this right to resist that has been taken away from the population. Yeah. And then this kind of ultra-nationalist, ultra-racism that's being promoted here.
Exactly.
It's interesting because I had brought up the, you know, the English Empire. And these guys also had this kind of a thing, right? So, for example, France or Belgium or Germany or these guys that went into the African continent, they had the same, you know, supremacist ideology. We are better than these other nations. We will come to civilize them. We will come and colonize them, you know, and if that takes us, you know, using their human resources, you know, using their natural resources, then so be it, right?
Absolutely.
And so that's why I wanted to make this connection that these two are quite similar. So, but as you said, this is at a much higher intensity.
Absolutely. So a few points about your question. First of all, this is an extension of the same mindset.
Right.
Because obviously this mindset of extreme racism, in fact, I would say a psychotic level of racism. This is not something that is exclusive only to the Zionists,
right.
but it can be found in other nations and regimes as well. And this has been something because obviously at the background is shaitan, mm-hmm. and shaitan does not discriminate.
Well, this idea of American exceptionalism, America can go and
exactly.
do whatever it wants, wherever it wants. Right. Why? Because, you know, it's the best country in the world.
So when we're focusing on the Zionist regime, we're not negating the oppression that has happened historically mm-hmm. through colonialism, through all these mm-hmm. other sources of oppression. So that is the first point. Mm-hmm. Number two, we see that the same colonial regime facilitated and kind of helped the Zionist regime to come into existence. So it is an extension of the same project. And now, even today, they feed off the Zionist regime. So there is this collusion, there is this coordination between this satanic, I'd say, this satanic and conspiratorial coordination between the Zionists and these materialist powers in the world. So they kind of help one another maintain the status quo of injustice on a global level. Then thirdly, even if you make a kind of a very basic comparison between the level of oppression that these other systems were inflicting upon victim nations to the level of oppression that this Zionist project is inflicting upon the Palestinian people, you see that there is a quite a difference. For example, when the British Empire or the Spanish Empire or any other of these European empires, which again is interesting that most of this historically speaking and the worst crimes committed in this way were of people from the West, right? And now they lecture us about human rights. But coming back to the issue, when they used to occupy a place, they would not actively try to dismantle the nationhood of the people living there. Mm. So they would occupy, they would exploit in terms of resources. Sometimes it would lead to genocide as well, but at the same time, it would not be a negation of the identity of the people there. And that was why these people were able to rise up later on and still preserving that identity, that independent identity of themselves, and be able to dislodge their colonial oppressors and occupiers. But in the Zionist regime, there is this active project of trying to dismantle and destroy the very identity of the Palestinians.
Mm, it's like a version 2.0.
Exactly. This is like the upgraded version of the same experiment. It's as if they practiced on this on a global level and then brought in all of those expertise and focused it upon one point on the global map, which was Palestine, for whatever motivations that they might have. So within the Israeli regime, you see this active cultural appropriation. You see this active appropriation of the entire legacy of the Palestinian people, of architecture, of their arts, of their archaeology, trying to prove that these people were just Bedouin. They were just like settlers here and they had no identity. Even the word Palestine is something that these people want to erase out of history.
Right.
And that is why you see in the West right now, lobbies of the same Zionist regime, of the same Zionist entity, and the global Zionist project worldwide, if anyone tries to speak for Palestine, even in the smallest and the most minute way, even if this person himself or herself is a Jew, even if this person himself or herself is a descendant of the people who were hurt or persecuted by the Nazis in Germany, they would still be attacked in the most vicious manner.
Right.
So people like, for example, professors in the United States.
Right, there's many actually.
Rabbis denied the right to be, when they died, denied the right to be buried in Jewish cemeteries because of this hegemony that the Zionists had in those areas. Or politicians in Britain. Britain that kind of is so proud of itself of being a hallmark of civil liberty and so on and so forth and of the rule of law, for example. But you see that when one politician or a few politicians, they rise to a level where they can be influential and without being racist, without being anti-Semitic in any way, they support, they support the rights of the Palestinian people, you find that they are excommunicated, they are boycotted, they are forced out of the limelight. Then you suddenly, these other tools of oppression that have been kind of outsourced of governments into the civilian sector, right, in the West. You see, like, derogatory stuff written about them on Twitter, on in newspapers, on TV channels, trying to destroy their very image in society.
Yeah.
And it comes to a level that one American professor said that I am not only unemployed right now, I am unemployable. Any university that employs me will get into a huge amount of trouble.
Right.
Now that is fascism. That is the democratization of fascism.
Right, right.
In the Nazi regime, fascism was limited to the establishment, right? But in West right now, and in the what I like to call Tawahush-e-Gharbi, what Imam Khomeini used to call Tawahush-e-Gharbi, he wouldn't call it the Western civilization, he would call it Western New Barbarism.
Right.
Within Western New Barbarism, and in all its extensions throughout the world, fascism has been, is no longer an exclusive ideology of the ruling elite, but it's been outsourced into the public, disseminated like a virus, worse than corona, and it is in all aspects of their cultural institutions, in their academic institutions, in all aspects of their society. So it permeates society in that manner, and it becomes this extreme, in fact, even George Orwell couldn't have imagined it at this level. Even in his works, there was this central government that was kind of looking at everything and censoring everything, but now it's been disseminated into society. So you just can't say anything against the Zionist regime.
And you can't say anything, against the Zionist regime. So, but here again, I don't know if you want to give us maybe a few more instances of this, because again, you know, we were talking about this idea of that the amount of this collection of oppression that we see in Palestine is something that's unprecedented.
Exactly.
And I know we're talking about those things as we go along, but you know, I wanted to see, you know, the first one, of course, was this right to not to be able to resist.
Absolutely. The right not to be able to resist, the attack on a cultural and ethnic identity, the fact that the occupying force is not a sovereign, recognized entity politically, but a collection of people that were forced onto a land and had no identity of themselves, no political identity, which is in fact very interesting from a legal point of view.
Perspective, yeah.
You can't challenge such an occupation in any court of law, because who are you challenging? Before 1948, there was no other entity that you could point out.
Right,
so it's like a ghost having attacked you. You can't point blame at anyone, because England would step aside and say, well, we have nothing to do about it, right? We just, we had that.
They were the first people to do that, actually, to step aside
to
and say, this is your problem.
It has nothing to do with your own problem, right?
Yeah.
The United States would say, it's your problem. Negotiate, right?
Negotiate.
Because before the, like, if I compare this, for example, to the Kashmir issue, the people of Kashmir can point blame towards India and towards the legitimate government of India, of the federal government in India, and say that these were the people who occupied us. This is the political entity that occupied us. But the Palestinian people, who do they blame? Really, it is. It was a conspiracy created by the most satanic of minds. It's somehow comparable to how when they tried to assassinate the Holy Prophet in Mecca before his migration.
Right,
they said, just bring in everyone.
So that so you can't blame anyone.
So you can't blame anyone, right? Because where does the blame lie if everyone is involved? It's like a mob coming in with no coherent identity, right? So that is a fourth point. Then in terms of genocide, if you look at the ratio of people murdered, people stripped of their rights to the right to exist and to live, as a ratio of the population of the Palestinian people,
right,
you'll find that this proportion is unprecedented in contemporary times. Right? You might have other places where, like for example, in Vietnam, the oppression and the heinous crimes done by the American regime were obviously they were like these huge figures, but in terms of the proportion. And in terms of how long this conflict has existed, and in terms of the fact that it continuously keeps happening. So it's not just a one-time event that happened across a scope of like a few years. No, this is like 60 years. This has been going on, more than 60 years. This has been going on for 70 years or more, and it just keeps going on. So it's like a slow murder of a nation.
Yeah.
It's a slow murder of a nation. So again, we see that this becomes more heinous than many of these other crimes committed across the world. Then another benchmark that we have here is the fact that if you look at the crimes created, the crimes perpetrated at other places in the world, and you kind of reverse engineer the blame, and I'm talking about the genuine crimes that are happening in different areas of the world.
Right, right.
If you reverse engineer the blame, if you reverse engineer the fault behind this entire conflict, you again reach the Zionist establishment. So when you're talking about, for example, Bahrain, when you're talking about Yemen, when you're talking about Kashmir, when you're talking about all of these, when you're talking about the black people in the United States, when you're talking about the oppression of the South American nations, you're always talking about some part of the Zionist establishment. So this entire dichotomy, creating this dichotomy between Israel, the illegitimate Zionist regime in Palestine, and other instances of oppression, this in itself is a false dichotomy. Yes. This is a kind of a plurality that another person, another narrative is trying to present in order to hide the fact that these are tentacles of the same octopus.
This satanic project, as
the
you
said. The satanic
once
project,
said.
Exactly. And when we see this, we understand that these other instances of oppression are in fact a consequence of whatever success the occupation force believes itself to have achieved in Palestine. That is what emboldens them in other places. That is what allows them to imagine that we can get away with the same kind of things in other places.
Right.
So if the Islamic Republic and if the Islamic Revolution under the leadership of Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, if they focus on a geopolitical level on Palestine, they are in fact indirectly protecting and preserving and fighting for the rights of all of these flashpoints throughout history. They're fighting for the rights of the African-American people, even though the African-American people might not realize this. They're fighting for the rights of the native indigenous American people, even though these people might not realize this. They're fighting for the right of the indigenous people in Canada and in Australia, in South America, even though these people, because of that media censorship that we have internationally, they don't realize this. Fighting Israel is fighting for the sake of the soul of the entire humanity. It's not just a geographic issue. Israel is the symbol of global oppression. So it's like this. It's like this. For example, when you read fantasy tales, there's always this central kind of a thing
that
if that is destroyed, for example, in the Lord of the Rings, right? If that central tower is destroyed, then the entire network of that evil will kind of fade away. That is the position that Israel has within the global Zionist project of oppression and exploitation and of destroying nations and their identities at a political level, at an economic level, at a military level, and especially at a cultural level. Mm. Please remember, globalism, the globalism of fasid and corrupt culture, where they try to destroy local cultures, destroy local lifestyles, lifestyles and cultures that have developed over a period of centuries, of a period of millennia, and are derived from local wisdom.
Right.
When globalism tries to destroy these local cultures and tries to paint over them, turning them all into a uniform kind of corrupt, illogical, shameless culture where everything is seen from a Western perspective, where you have no shame, where you have no modesty, where you have no respect for your elders, where you have no respect for any of the sanctities, where you are motivated and you are pushed towards destroying everything that is sacred in society. This culture, this cultural invasion, which Imam Khomeini incidentally pointed out right at the beginning of the revolution, he coined this word, tahajjum-e-farhangi, cultural invasion, right? This cultural invasion is one of the key aspects of the international Zionist campaign to destroy human values. Because you must remember this, Zionism, their true victim is humanity.
Mm.
It's not one nation or the other. So as I said, when we defend Palestine, we are defending the true soul of humanity.
Mm.
And interestingly today, Brother Sharia, one of the interesting things today, and the sawab of it and the divine reward of it goes back to Imam Khomeini, Rizwanullah ta'ala alayh, and obviously to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Hafizahullah. Today, the people are waking up. So protest against Israel, resistance against Israel, first of all, has become global despite the media censorship,
right,
despite the sanctions and all of these walls that were built up to kind of stifle this voice.
Mm.
It has become global. And not only has it become global, it has gone across cultures.
Mm.
So you have Jews, you have Christians, you have even secular people protesting against Israel.
Against Israel. Sayyid Agha Ali Raza, though, because I know we've went over on the time, but I will hold you humbly that this aspect of where we are seeing things going, we will keep to another talk show, inshallah. It's a good cliffhanger. And it's also a good place to end, that the tides are turning on a global level, inshallah. And we will talk about that in another talk show when we get a chance. But we run out of time on the program. Inshallah. I do want to thank you for taking time out. A very profound talk show, mashallah, on these various issues surrounding Palestine. And may Allah bless you and your efforts. And inshallah, we hope to see you on another talk show.
Thank you so very much.
And jazakallah, dear viewers, on this talk show where we were commemorating Al-Quds Day. And as Sayyid Agha Ali Raza very eloquently said, the freeing of Palestine is the freeing of the human soul. Inshallah, we hope you have a excellent Al-Quds Day wherever you are. May it be successful, and may Allah help all of the Muslims all across the world, especially our brothers and sisters in Palestine. That's all from us. Fi amanullah and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wherever you are.